Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
If it's a use that's not approved by the zoning, you really have to understand the zoning. You might want to start talking to the county or the city and what's the likelihood of getting something approved there, because if they're trying to change this area to mixed-use apartments and you're trying to build some retail pads, then it's going to be tough to get that rezoning done this year.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest-running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and today I'm joined by Josh Weiner. Josh is joining us from the DC metro area. He is a principal at KLNB, a commercial real estate advisor who specializes in leasing pad sites, out parcels, and land deals. He represents both tenants and landlords in this. Josh, can you tell us a little bit more about your background, and then I want to dive into this specialization of yours?
Sure. Slocum, first off, thanks for having me on here. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So like you mentioned, I am a principal with KLNB. A little background on the company. The company has been around for 50 years. We are based in the Mid-Atlantic area and cover five states, primarily Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. We have over 150 employees and commercial real estate advisors that cover all aspects of commercial real estate, from retail, office, industrial, multifamily, medical, investment sales, leasing. So a little bit about myself. I started in the commercial real estate business in April 2007. Not great timing on my part, but had to get in there at some point. So now I'm in my 16th year in the business, nine of which have been with KLNB. I absolutely love what I do and add in value to my clients every day. And to go into a little bit about what I specialize in, mentioned that I specialize in retail, pad site, and or also called out parcel deals, both on the tenant and the landlord developer side. So some of the familiar names I represent that might help people with this category are Popeyes, Dunkin' Donuts, Outback, the gas convenience store Sheetz, which is very popular on the East Coast. So tenants like that. And then on the developer side, they may own or purchase 3 to 5, maybe 20 acres. And we help them with the leasing of those pad sites, which are typically ground leases or possibly purchases. I guess also I should add in there that I am a husband to Stephanie and a father to Penelope, Joe, and Annabelle, who mean the world to me.
Nice. Are most of the tenants you represent national brands that are generally recognizable and have lots of sites?
Yeah, that's typically the program that I work on. As you can imagine, any of these pad site tenants who either sometimes are purchased, sometimes they ground lease, pretty expensive as far as the site work goes and the building goes. So yeah, most are national brands with franchisees, and I represent those franchisees in their expansion.
Josh, as a listener of our show, you may already know this, but I come primarily from the apartment world. I'm going to get on my soapbox here for a second, Josh, because personal experience is leading to this question. I'm coming from the apartment world, and we have very simple platforms for connecting landlord and tenant, or connecting tenant with space. There's Zillow.com, Apartments.com. No one else really matters, maybe Facebook Marketplace, but we have a few places that everyone knows where to go to find apartments, and everyone knows where to go to find tenants. Very simple, very easy way to connect. I also have a small neighborhood office building where I rent private office suites, and I haven't found any platform. I'm talking about one or two rooms, maybe a private bathroom, all other amenities shared. One white collar professional wants to work in that space and usually meet clients. I don't know what the platform is where all of those tenants are going so that they can find me and I can find them. I imagine it's even more complicated in what you do. So really the question I'm asking here is, what does the process look like, both from the tenant perspective and from the landlord perspective, of finding each other and getting enough spaces in front of a tenant to make sure they're getting a great fit and getting enough prospective tenants in front of a landlord to make sure they're getting a great fit?
Slogan, that's a great question.
You just send everyone to LoopNet, right?
No, unfortunately, that doesn't work. A lot of times it's not updated, especially in the land world. So I look at a lot of maps. I spend more time on probably sites like LandVision, which downloads parcels from the county records with accurate information about who the owners are and what the zoning is. So I spend a lot of time in there. Before we even get to that, it's sitting down strategy sessions with the clients. And we come up with where we think the target markets should be together. Maybe they have other stores in the market or stores in other markets where they know they've been successful. And we can look at a map, see where the holes are, see where the growth is. If they already have 100 stores in the market, then there's only so many locations they can grow to. But we see where the new housing is coming, where the new retail is coming. And KLMB represents not just the clients I represent, but a lot of other ones. So we have a lot of market knowledge and a lot of market intel, which is super important. But we get down to it, and you got the brand, you got the street that they want to be on or the exit they want to be on. It just comes down to reaching out to every property owner in that area and finding out if they're willing to sell, ground lease, or maybe there's a potential property that could be sold as larger that the developer could buy for one of my clients. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but it's a lot of work. I call it hunting is what I typically do when I'm not looking for these sites for my clients. And some can ground lease and purchase, some can only ground lease, and some can only purchase. So it just all depends on the client. And then, of course, you got to deal when you're going to shopping centers, which we do also, now parcels. You got to deal with restrictions of anchors or other tenants in there. There's a lot of challenges. And then on top of that, if you do find a site and use, and a lot of times the Washington, D.C. market is not a buy right use for a fast food drive through or a gas convenience store or a car wash. So then the client has to get the special exception and then also on top of that, the site plan approved. So it's a time process. So it's a lot that goes into it. So fortunately, yeah, we can't just go to CoStar. CoStar has good information about property owners. Sometimes it has phone numbers, but we can't rely on that to find sites for clients.
Josh, I want to know how you'd answer this question in an elevator if you only had 5 floors of time to do it. It should be clear to all of our listeners already that there is a high level of expertise and particularly market knowledge that makes what you do possible. What is the specific market knowledge that you have spent so much time building up?
Another great question. It just has to do with, look at just one market in particular, say a city, just knowing what every retail property is on every single street, every corner, understanding the zoning, most importantly, knowing the comps. We're talking about pad site retail leasing, then we need to know what the most recent five deals done there were, at what price and what size and how the pad was delivered, because that's what's important. But you don't want your client overpaying, but you also want to educate them on where the market is, so when they do put an offer in, that they have a good chance of getting the site. Knowing if there's any new office coming in or there's any new multifamily coming in, that's going to help drive business. It's just constantly staying up to date, and that's talking to other people in the industry, reading about it. We have a research department at our company also, but that's what I think of when I think about market knowledge, is just being able to provide the most value for your client, because we are an advisor. At the end of the day, they make the decision, and we got to give them the best advice so they can make the right decision, so they continue to open more stores and continue growing their business in this market.
Josh, what are the factors to a particular pad or a particular site that make them most appealing from the landlord perspective? Say I'm the landlord, I want to know whether or not I can outparcel part of my parking lot or part of my space. And from the tenant perspective, I want to know that I'm going to be able to drive enough traffic, there's going to be enough cross-pollination from businesses in the area, that there are enough cars driving by. What are the individual factors that make for a compelling outparcel?
I think an outparcel in a shopping center, the first thing is the size is really important. Anything less than half acre is going to be tough, and there's only so many potential users at that size. Really need an acre to 2 acres to really start getting a lot of tenants looking at the site. Mentioned a lot of tenant access is super important. There's too many turns. You're talking a gas convenience store, then it's just not going to work. Full service restaurant doesn't have the best access, but great visibility. Everybody wants visibility. And obviously you pay for it. First row at the party, you're going to pay more than if you're second row at the party. Specifically, second row, you might find user like the daycare might be a user that goes on that parcel. We actually have a company that we subscribe to called Placer AI, and it's able to actually see the cell phone data for a particular shopping center. So we can see how many people are actually coming into our competitors in that market or the shopping center in that market. So it can help you really determine the strength of that ad site when we're trying to sell it to other users. But honestly, it always comes down to access, visibility. So that's, you know, traffic light. You can get a right in, right out off the road. And the size of the parcel are the key things.
You didn't mention traffic count. Is that just because I said it already or because it's not that important of a factor?
I guess I maybe thought of that as a given, but you're right. Traffic count, typically it's 18,000 cars minimum per day for any site. Certainly, we see a lot more than that in most locations in Washington, D.C., but that's a bare minimum. But yeah, that's huge important for retail. You always see retail concentrated into areas, but yeah, that's certainly one that is a big checklist item for all the retailers.
Taking the tenant's perspective, you were talking about the possibilities of both ground lease and purchase. Setting aside existing structures that are going to be repurposed by a new tenant, between ground lease and purchase, I don't want to make any assumptions here. What makes those different strategies advantageous to different tenants and to different landlords?
The tenants that look to do both are typically more interested in purchasing. They'd rather own the property long-term versus ground lease someone else's property. They still can obviously potentially depreciate the building, but they'd much rather own. But this is the Washington, D.C. market, and there's a lot of sophisticated landowners. They don't want to sell. They'd much rather get a ground lease that they can cap out and either sell or just collect that income for a long time for generations of their family, because these tenants have excellent credit and they're 15, 20 years with options that gets them up to 40, 50 years. an increase is typically or 10% every 5 years. So there is some kind of increase there. So if they can, they want to buy. But then when you're talking about national brands, maybe publicly traded brands, a lot of times, like, for example, like Outback, they want to ground lease. They want to conserve their capital and not purchase. And then you also got tenants that don't like Starbucks and Chipotle, which really don't do either. They prefer a build-to-suit by the landlord, or they would have a developer purchase the land and do a build-to-suit. So it's tenants that could be a purchase, even they find a site. But they're not very rare. 1-2% of deals could possibly be ground leases nowadays. Same reason, not purchasing to conserve capital. But I think it all depends on the strategy of the user. But definitely see it both ways.
We'll get back to the show with first some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. Deciding how to invest your capital is more challenging than ever. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company with a solid track record and that has thrived through various economic cycles. Companies like BAM Capital. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator that has delivered a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has never missed a preferred payment, never lost an LP's investment, and never called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital is currently raising capital for a fund designed for accredited investors, targeting a 15 to 20% IRR and a 2 to 2.5x equity multiple to its investors over a 3 to 5 year hold period. If you're an accredited investor and you want to learn more about multifamily investment opportunities with BAM Capital, visit capital.thebamcompanies.com. Again, that's capital.thebamcompanies.com.
Thank you, Josh. Now that I've had the opportunity to hear you give a much better explanation, I think what I'm hearing is that it really depends on the business plan of the tenant and of the landlord, and particularly whether they are looking for, whether they're thinking long-term or short-term with regards to their returns. I have a friend, fellow podcast host here, Ash Patel, who tells stories about selling out parcels on retail centers that he has so that a lot of capital can be returned to his investors early on, which is very advantageous to the internal rate of return on their deals. However, it of course means that they do not have cash flow from those out parcels the way they would if they ground leased, which would be better for their returns long term. And same thing, you mentioned particularly publicly traded companies that are looking for pad sites, that they tend to prefer a ground lease because there is a smaller impact on their immediate financials, which have to be reported to shareholders. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's a great summary. I see that strategy a lot. What your partner does is buy a center, sell off the out parcels. We see that a lot around here. But any out parcels in front of a shopping center or near other retail, if it's got good access, good visibility, they're in high, high demand right now. And we're seeing just a lot of activity, a lot of competition. Every brand I represent in the category has competition with another brand. So we're constantly fighting over pad sites and out parcels.
Josh, we're recording in the middle of Q3 2023, and it looks like inflation is finally slowing, but it's a very curious time to hear you say that there is so much demand. If that demand is market cycle driven, correct me where I'm wrong on that assumption if you need to, why is it that where we are in the market cycle is creating such demand?
I think coming out of COVID, we were down for a little bit, obviously, but it wasn't long for retail, just retail in general. And obviously the pad site, out parcel world falls into that. It's just been extremely active. Even in shopping centers with inline space, they're getting leased with multiple LOI offers. We're seeing increases in rent. But I always think from the pad site out parcels, once we sign the contract or if we sign the lease, if we're ground leasing, it's still going to be 2 to 3 years till they open. So no one knows where the market is going to be there. The biggest hurdle we're seeing right now is site work cost going up a lot. I'm hearing that across the board from our clients. We're still having some supply chain issues on some equipment, HVAC units. I have a client with Fryer. There's been a lot of that stuff that's still affecting just when they get open. I have one client telling me, he's like, I got so much stuff under construction, Josh. We just got to slow down for a little bit. because I can't get these stores open because I can't get half this equipment that I need. So that's certainly affected, but demand's just there. The Washington, D.C. area is a great market, always has been. We've always been a lot slower when so-called recessions come because we have the federal government here. We've still got a lot of corporations coming here. You know, Amazon obviously built the big facility here. We got a lot of Fortune 500 companies, a lot of great colleges. So it's just always been a very strong market.
It sounds like you're saying there are a lot of retailers who are trying to pick up where they left off pre-COVID in their expansion plans. Is that what's doing it? Is it that we are now out of the lull and therefore they have some extra ground to cover?
Yeah, we're just seeing a lot of activity. And even before COVID, I remember just being on lots of tours of clients already expand. And then, yeah, once we came out of it, sales have been doing well and they continue to want to grow in our market. I'm hearing that from my broker friends in other markets also. Same thing. I'm sure there's some spaces still hanging out there that are hard to lease, but they're few and far between now. We have a very low vacancy rate, which is favoring landlords right now. Could change someday, but right now it's definitely more of a landlord market.
One last big scenario as we wrap up this conversation, Josh. The vast majority of our listeners are already involved in commercial real estate investing actively and passively. And a lot of them are considering the acquisition of the kinds of properties that may have these outpads or outparcels. Taking the perspective of someone looking to acquire the larger retail space, the strip mall, the shopping mall, that kind of place, how should they be assessing potential outlots that could be sold or ground leased to either return significant capital early on in the business plan or to create additional cash flow? What is it that they should be looking at in those potential outlots?
First, obviously, look at how big the lots are. We talked about that, and maybe they're overparked. And parking regulations, I just wrote about this recently, are changing all across the country right now because of the world we live in and the inconvenience. So there's going to be more and more outparcels created. And I'm hearing this from a lot of the engineers that I know. And then reach out to a commercial real estate advisor in your market who have done deals with other outparcel tenants, whether it's Dunkin' or Starbucks or Popeyes or any of the full service restaurants, and find out what the value would be. They'll be able to tell you pretty quickly within 5 to 10% of where you're likely to end up based on a certain delivery condition, based on their experience. And we talked about market knowledge. And they could potentially, while you have in our contract, start shopping it for you for potential purchasers and ground leases. And that could really help determine where your returns are. But I think it's a great opportunity, not something you really ever need to wait on, because right now there's always going to be a lot of interest, especially when you're talking about high traffic roads with good access and visibility.
Understanding the vast majority of our listeners are not in the DC area and that you have to speak in very generic terms, Josh, give us a top factors list, top three, top five list for potential outlot spaces. How big should they be? How can we track their visibility, the traffic count? What is like the top five things in an outlot?
Size-wise, the smallest half acre, typically up to maybe 2 acres, is going to be the ideal size. It's really important to understand the condition of the property. If it's raw land, most tenants want what's called pad-ready delivery, which is a rough-graded pad with all utilities brought to it in the pad, access roads, stormwater management. So that's an expense to keep in mind. It's a shopping center. Obviously, you're going in a parking lot. It's a little bit less expensive as far as site work goes, but certainly keeping the size, obviously, delivery condition goes without saying. They can't see you. No one's going to go there. You got to have visibility. There's trees blocking or it's just sitting behind another center. It's not a good retail outparcel. It's got to be in front of your face on the high traffic roads. Higher the traffic, typically higher the rent, right? Understand the market comps, because that's important. You need to find someone who knows that and has done them, or look up investment sales packages where they have some of the rents in the market. But make sure you understand with those comps how the property was delivered, what the credit is behind it. There's a lot of factors that determine that rent. I would say access is key, and traffic lights always going to add more value, right in, right out if you can get it. And then one thing I should mention is if it's a use that's not approved by the zoning, you really have to understand the zoning. Is you might want to start talking to the county or the city and what's the likelihood of getting something approved there, because if they're trying to change this area to mixed use apartments and you're trying to build some retail pads, and it's going to be tough to get that rezoning done that you need. So that's another thing I should really mention to keep in mind.
So I've got a list of seven factors here. The first being the size of the outlot. The second being the condition. How pad ready is it? Third is visibility. That goes along with traffic count and access, accessibility from the road. And then you need to focus on the comparable outlots in the area and zoning. Make sure that what you want to do is going to get approved. Is that a fair summary?
You're better summarizing than I am. That was good.
Well, I get to stand here and listen to you give all the details, and then I get the easy work. Well, Josh, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend you know we can add value to through our conversation today. Thank you, and have a best ever day.
Thanks a lot, Slogan.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.